Welcome to Live Action Star Wars. I'm James.
I'm Ralph.
And today we are talking about Light and Magic, Episode 5, the penultimate part, and it's called Morphing. Now, in the title of the episode, it's spelled M-O-R-P-H-I-N-G. And I got to think that Dennis Mirren hates that.
Is in the episode itself?
The episode title is spelt with a P-H, despite the fact
just
that
not the Disney Plus.
No, I mean, is it not on Disney Plus? I'm pretty sure on Disney Plus it's spelt with the P-H. But then...
I spelled it on ours with the F, because I think that's what it said on Disney Plus. But is the title card in the thing a P-H?
I think on the app, I'm pretty sure it's with a P-H. Right. And the
You look it up...
is because Dennis Mirren, in the episode, like, makes a whole point of, like, when they were discussing it, they were like, no, we called the transformation sort of process morphing. And now everyone since then, and even the dictionary is wrong, and everyone spells it with a P-H, but we want to...
Well, maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's the joke.
Yeah.
I know on Disney Plus it's listed with an F, because that's what I made the title card for this.
Yep.
So while you look it up, but is it in the movie? Did you look at the title card?
Let me see.
I'll say hi to the folks while you look it up. Sarah's here. We're here. That's nice. Scott D, Mark Bibbert, Vactor. How's it going, Vactor? I just did some stuff for him. And Lucha Johnny. Oh, and last but not least, StreamYard is always here every week.
Our most loyal
rarely gets
watcher.
Yeah. Always the first one to leave a comment.
Yeah.
this example thing. Oh, Stevie's here. But I knew that, but she just didn't say hi. Hi. morphing. I was like kind of hoping that this whole episode would be about the stained glass man, but obviously it wasn't.
We got some stained glass man stuff.
Yeah, some. Stained glass man is one of those things. I don't know. Like I'm sort of. I don't know if it's obsessed is the right word, but it's like seeing Steve Gawley or John Knoll show up in a documentary. Yeah. Like anytime Stained Glass Man gets brought up, I get very excited. And it still looks good.
It is morphing. I was completely wrong. They did spell it correctly. Okay. They spelled it with an F. They spelled it correctly as Dennis Mirren would be happy. So my mistake. It was quite late when I was watching it last.
But it also proves Dennis Mirren wrong that everywhere.
Oh yeah. Well, everywhere outside of the family, I can imagine, sort of says it. This was really like a showcase episode for Mirren, I thought. Like, and it was, there was a lot of interesting things where he was one of the OG guys who was able to adapt and change and roll with the times and was excited to. He didn't seem to be doing it begrudgingly. Some of the others moved on and they carried on, but he seemed to be excited about pushing technology forward.
Right. This also sets up a rift between the model makers and the computer generated guys, which is, I'm assuming, going to have a lot to do next week with
Jurassic
Phil
Park.
Tippett.
Yeah.
Phil Tippett and Dennis Mirren. Who we've talked about. They talked about their close relationship before.
Yeah, they're brothers, basically. Like, yeah, it's super cute, their relationship. And we talked about it at the end of last week's episode, how we thought maybe we would get some Jurassic Park in this one and it would be teased out and left with the prequels on the horizon or the special editions. No, this was all like the late 80s, early 90s, pre-Jurassic Park. It was all the digital stuff with James Cameron and the morphing effects. So, you know, we got...
So, here's the thing. Steven Spielberg was working on Schindler's List and couldn't deal with a lot of the post-production for Jurassic Park. And so that, from what I understand, fell in the lap of George Lucas.
Okay,
George Lucas apparently got... essentially Jurassic Park, maybe a rough cut or something, and worked with ILM and worked with the editors to complete Jurassic Park. And I know in Jurassic Park, George Lucas has like top of the bill.
Thanks
to George Lucas. And I feel he just sort of took over that production.
Shadow post-production director.
I'd love to see what that's all about, because I'm sure George Lucas was in the edit bay with ILM and Dennis Muren and trying to figure that shit out. But with Jurassic Park, we know that Jurassic Park is sort of the floodgate that reopened Star Wars.
And it was what gave George the confidence. So having him there being in it would give him the confidence to sort of be like, I can make movies again. I feel like I'm ready to do this again.
Yeah. So with this one teasing Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
It's the next one is the final one. Right. And it's going to get into Jurassic Park, the floodgates, special edition, maybe a little bit as a test. And then
I would think,
and the prequels. And then after the prequels, every movie changed since then. So I see them doing like a, again, we're speculating on stuff. Everybody in the chat's probably already watched
a montage. I'm assuming
Marvel and like, I can't think of any other leaps. It might end with like Luke Skywalker in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, I mean, possibly, but there's been so many like other specials just specifically about that. And with all the Marvel releases now, like we've like, especially since Disney Plus launched, we've had a dedicated doc for each of them. So they don't need to really touch on them, but we've got Iron Man in the opening credits of this. So they're definitely going to sort of get to 2008, I'd say.
Right. But I feel like, as far as like this story goes, and ILM, I feel like it's gonna end with, it's like a montage. Like we're gonna get it. Once we hit 1999 and Phantom Menace release, we have DVD releases, and the DVD releases have the rest all of the story.
Exactly,
every single effects thing.
It's the appendices. Yeah, the appendices are like, the list of citations is like, here you go, for further reading, go watch this special edition, this documentary, like, all of the rest.
Stuff we've covered.
Exactly. Or just, if you're interested in only the Star Wars stuff, just keep subscribed to Live Action Star Wars. We've got you covered.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll do the homework for you.
Not a lot of Star Wars talk in this one, which is fine. Again, this feels like a vacation. This really does feel like a vacation. And I feel bad because I feel like I've been like neglecting Twitter and Instagram and stuff, but there's so much Star Wars stuff out there, guys, that like,
and there's so much coming at the end of the year, like between, like we'll be covering Andor as our focus, but like there's other things coming down the line. I've gonna book episodes, we might end up doing a special episode about Bad Batch if it's particularly good, or like a little mini episode, or if we have a guest on that wants to talk about it, like I'm sure that these things will come up. Like there's a lot coming at the end of this year or just in a few weeks time. So this is our summer vacation and it's nice.
Yeah. Cause I love Star Wars, but sometimes I can use a break from Star Wars
all the time. We talked about it a lot in our early episodes. Like we had years, we had decades at times where there was nothing. So now having it constant is great, but it's almost like I need a breather. Like I've enjoyed these couple of months where I haven't had a Star Wars book to read. Like since finishing Shadow of the Sith, like I've been reading other things and it's nice to get away from that galaxy far, far away for just a little while.
I'm assuming that after Andor happens, that's when we're going to get the Bad Batch. And that might be nice to go back to our bi-weekly schedule.
To
take another break, but also I have a hunch that's kind of the time period that Invincible season one landed.
That seems about right. So it will be bi-weekly for here, but we'll still be podcasting weekly.
Yeah. So I'm kind of, if that's the way it happens, that's great.
That's ideal. Great. Yeah.
We can do some real easy live action Star Wars, do some Data Link episodes where we don't have to watch anything or they're gonna make it really easy on us. Andor's what, 12 weeks?
Yeah.
Of getting
because we got 3 in 1. It'll be nine weeks.
It'll be like 2.5 months of me getting up at 5:30 watching an episode and and
not,
jumping on
maybe
the
not
feet,
every week. But... If there's going to be some weeks in there where we might have guests that want to do a little bit later, so we can do it a little bit more on your schedule.
I mean, my schedule has to be at 5:30.
Us just to be able to get online.
I don't want to watch it without Stevie.
Yeah, of course.
It's not fun. I think there was one episode of Obi-Wan I watched without Stevie when we had a later start, and I was just like, this isn't fun.
It's not as, I know what you mean.
It's not fun. Yeah. It's, I'm listening to a podcast now where the last couple episodes have been sort of a real bummer, and someone that I really like has been kind of a bummer and a little bit sour on the movies they're covering.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, I have a feeling, because this person's a new father, that he's watching the stuff on his own, and it's not the kind of movies that are enjoyed on
No, you need, so there are definitely certain things that are better with other people.
Yeah. And I know for you, you watch them at work, I think.
It depends on my schedule. I try to watch, if it's a new thing, like I'll watch it at home. Then if I'm doing a rewatch, I might sort of chuck it on. Yeah. Watching it at work is like,
oh, at least I don't have to work. This is great. You know?
I know what you're talking about. I'm always working.
Yeah.
no. It's only like as and when. And that's the sort of stuff. Like, these documentaries have been great for that, because I don't mind if I have to pause it and do stuff, like I can do that and jump back in. But if I'm watching, say, like Andor, I want to be focused on that. So that'll be definitely watching it before we record the podcast, taking some notes and all of that, which I'm looking forward to, but this has been a nice summer vacation.
It has. It really has. Like, if they could do something like this, like once a year, that'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
Because it's like not Star Wars specific.
No.
Like, sure, the first like three episodes were, but it wasn't about, like, it wasn't watching the movie. It's like,
give us one next year on Skywalker Sound. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, just go through the departments. Give us one of these for each. Or even when music. They've done... Yeah, the music. Or even when they had... I think it was last September that Star Wars Visions came out, wasn't it? Sometime around then. It was like, we didn't cover it, but... You still haven't seen it.
I've watched one. I still watched the first one. I should watch those.
The first one is probably my favorite. I don't know. I'd need to go back to them. But I like that as well, because it's like, there's Star Wars content there, but I don't feel the urgency that I need to watch it immediately. I don't mind about getting spoiled and things like that.
Also, anytime I can watch, I mean, not that this show's a burden, but like when I watch stuff, it feels like homework. Because I'm taking notes and stuff. I haven't taken any notes. I didn't take any notes for this episode. Light and Magic, but it's one of those things where I feel obligated to not be sour on something, to find the positivity in things. And so I'm sitting there like thinking while I'm watching, what do I want to talk about? And so like when I watch Bad Batch, I just don't want to talk.
Take
about
notes. Yeah, exactly. I'm the same. I'd rather just watch and enjoy that as like almost like, you know, Saturday morning cartoons.
And then the thing with like live action is I'm so excited about it. I'll sit there and watch it and be excited and not need to take notes. And still be able to talk about the positive stuff. It's weird. My level of excitement, it's the reason why this is live action Star Wars, because my level of excitement for a new Star Wars thing is like through the roof. When it comes to live action, like seeing Star Destroyers, seeing new planets and new weapons and new lightsabers, it's like, that's exciting to me.
Going back to Coruscant, seeing the Senate and things like that.
But what's funny is that last Andor trailer came out. It was so good. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I don't think we have time to cover it, or we could, but we never did. And then I'm like, we're okay where it is.
It's so funny hearing different people's takes on that last trailer specifically, because I've heard a lot of people say, I've watched it 50 times. Like, I watch it on a repeat, and like I'll put it on and I'll watch it like 15 times in one sitting, and I'm like, I think I've watched it twice, and I'm like, I loved it. I thought it was an amazing trailer. I don't want to pour over it again and again and again, because I know that we're going to do that every week for the next like 9 weeks when it starts. So I'd rather just go, cool, that's done its job. It's got me hyped up even more so for it. Now I can take a break for a few weeks essentially, and then dive into it fresh.
I feel like, yeah. Also with Andor, it's kind of an open book. There's nothing really sort of tied to this other than like Mon Mothma is there, but she is not in the prequels. So everything's really tied to Rogue One. Mm-hmm. So there's no speculating. And you just kind of like, I don't know really anything about the story. The only thing that sucks is I know how he dies. And I,
yeah. And we know that like Mon Mothma lives and like leads the rebellion. We know like things that we've seen. But
I think like Saw Gerrera is the only character that's really has a sort of a more rich history. I mean, I'm sure there's Andor and Mon Mothma stuff in the books, but it's one of those things where I'm like, I don't really need to speculate on any of these shots.
I love that.
But I think, because I was going to say, let's just not do trailer stuff before. But I have a feeling when the Ahsoka trailer drops.
Oh, yeah.
I want to pour over that.
I already do from the leaks from Comic-Con. I'm excited.
Ahsoka, do we know if Ahsoka takes place after Rebels?
Yeah.
And after Mandalorian.
It's set Mandalorian time frame. Like, it's set in the time frame of Mando.
So what's great about that is we don't know anybody's fate. No. This is what I want. Just move forward in this timeline. It doesn't have to necessarily be post Rise of Skywalker, but I love this.
By all accounts, they cancelled the animated Rebels follow-up because the plot that they were going to do in that, or at least big swaths of it, are being used for the Ahsoka series.
Ooh, that's awesome.
So presumably Thrawn and Ezra and all of that stuff.
And for those of you who are here for just live action, Ralph recommends the animated series Rebels.
Absolutely. Everyone, like, that is hands down my favorite Star Wars animated.
Yeah.
It's great. It's such a perfect type four season arc. Like, it's really, really good.
Yeah. And we haven't seen live action Zeb yet.
No. We got the back of Hera, didn't we, in that sort of Comic-Con leak. We know that Sabine's going to be there. No Zeb or Callus. Are they just off being totally hetero roommates, or are they going to get into the fight, or let's see. Callus, I'm curious.
Callus was the Imperial officer, right?
Mm-hmm. Who became the new Fulcrum.
What if they just cast, because I think it was I can't think of the name now. The actor that portrayed him from, he was in the Kinky Boots movie.
No idea.
He's black.
Okay.
He's of African descent.
Yeah.
Edgewafor?
Oh, Chiwetel?
Yes, I believe he played Callus.
Okay, cool.
And that would be kind of fun if they just could. I don't know. I don't know what kind of backlash.
I mean, unfortunately, we've seen what the ugly parts of Star Wars internet does. Right. So
I'm curious to see if the Rosario Dawson taking over for Ashley Eckstein group, where it's like she's the voice, she should be the character. Where that would what would happen if you had the original actor who's of a different color portray the same character. It would be a fun thing to
just and it's very much a hey, it's me, it doesn't matter, let's just keep moving.
Oh, it was David Oyelowo.
Still awesome though. It'd be cool, it'd be interesting to see if they did that. I don't think they would, unfortunately. But I mean, especially considering they've recast like Thrawn and everyone and all of those guys. Like, basically, like, the live action...
Do we know about Thrawn?
Not officially, but there's been a lot of speculation and, like, leaks and things, I think. I don't know if it's been official.
Did they flat out say that Jude Law was in Skeleton Crew, and Skeleton Crew is not about Thrawn?
Well, they've said that Jude Law is in Skeleton Crew, but they haven't said that he's not Thrawn. I think he'd be pretty good as Thrawn. Like, especially like the sort of slightly younger Thrawn that we got from Rebels. Like, yeah, he seems to age him down just a little bit from like the way I always pictured him in books. I want to see Captain Pelion. There's a character you could like do whatever you want with in this now. Like, he got name dropped at the end of Rebels. And as fans of Heir to the Empire and the old Timothy Zahn, like, original trilogy of his right. books, like, let's get
Scott. Is it you that is a big fan of Kyle Katarn?
Kyle Katarn's great.
He could fit in there, right?
I mean, that is who. I mean, he hasn't. He's actively sort of said, like, anyone that I talk about wanting to play, I've definitely will never play. But Rahul Cooley is a big Kyle Katarn fan, and has posted like some shots of him. Like, he'd be like, I think I could do Kyle Katarn really well.
Yeah.
But he's also made a point.
To do Ezra.
That's the thing. He's made a point so many times in like various different places. Like, I will post
a lot of fan art.
He'll share fan art if it's really, really good and it excites him, because he's like, look at this. This person's put in all this effort and has made this cool bit of fan art of me as Mr. Fantastic or Kyle Katarn or Ezra Bridger. But he's like, I'm posting these because I know that I have absolutely no chance of them ever coming to fruition. If it's something that he has a shot at, if it's something that there is open auditions for or anything like that, he's like, I'm not going to talk about it publicly. Why would I do that? I'm a professional. So
right.
getting him in a Star Wars somewhere at some point down the line, I feel like it's going to happen. I think it's got to happen, but I can't imagine it's any of these characters that we even know about yet. It'll be something also, obscure or something brand new, which I'm
brand new would be perfect.
Brand new is a
Carl Coley as a pilot.
Pilot,
I could
or
see him in a flight suit.
I could see him as a Jedi, like as a Jedi or a smugglery scoundrel type. Like, give him one of those sorts of roles. It'd be great.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We have gone 22 minutes without barely talking about live action. So, light and magic. Sorry. We normally do that at the end of these Light and Magic episodes, but we're getting a Star Wars talk out because there's not, as you said, there's not much Star Wars in this episode. What we do get, though, is George Lucas, John Knoll, Joe Johnston, Dennis Muren, all being like the most pro let's move to digital people in
right.
IM. Before we get the sort of the counterpart, like the guys who are a bit more hesitant and resistant to it. Yeah. We get those guys, and it really feels like, I mean, Joe Johnson was at college at this time. But with the introduction of John Knoll to the team, it really feels like this was...
I had no idea John Knoll was on the set of The Abyss.
Yeah, he was like the point man.
That, like, The Abyss is the thing. You think, of course, Stained Glass Man. We all know Stained Glass Man and love him.
That was
and
a proof of concept, CG stuff. But yeah.
I think Stained Glass Man's like a total of like maybe 20 seconds.
Something like that.
Screen time. Amazing. And kind of spearheaded by John Lasseter, who has sort of been problematic. So
I mean,
it's kind of just gloss over it a little bit.
It's talked about as like the first Pixar thing, really. Which makes sense.
And I want to say there's some CG stuff in Labyrinth. The opening has like a CG owl, I believe.
Again, Lucas was on set for some of Labyrinth, and he headhunted, who was it, Gene Bolt?
Yeah.
Yeah, from the model shop, who then bought over to ILM to work in the model shop.
Oh, to work on Willow. I love Willow so much.
I never seen Willow all the way through. Or if I have, I was a young kid and don't remember it. So I'm happy for everyone getting excited for the new series. It sort of means nothing for me.
Are you into fantasy and stuff? Like, do you? I'm not really.
I'm
like
not
the Lord of the Rings movies, but I don't have any sort of. I don't know.
It's so specific with fantasy stuff for me. Like, I enjoy it when I can get into a world, but I find fantasy worlds a lot harder to sort of buy into and get into because I don't know. I like knowing sort of the rules of the world, like the rules of like what the magic is in that world, like all of that sort of stuff, the world building.
I mean, if give it a shot, it's on Disney Plus.
I
really like it. It's one of my favorites. But it definitely has that Ewok adventure sort of vibe to it. But I mean, man, the more I watch it, the more I love it. And just seeing ILM in like 1987, like dark times, 10 years after Star Wars, where they came, like where they ended up. And it's kind of astounding. And I mean, Warwick Davis, he's so great. Only 17 years old in that movie.
Crazy. Yeah.
Val Kilmer is
at the height of his Val Kilmer, really. Like,
he, it's his like same year as Top Gun, I think.
Yeah.
He's doing a great version of Han Solo in that movie.
Yeah.
Han Solo, you're like, oh, he's a jerk, but he's cool and whatever. Mad Mardigan, he's cool, but also you don't know if he's going to like turn on you like any second.
Cool.
He's really, dude, give it a shot.
I'll give it a shot.
Even if you do like two viewings, like do one half one night and then the second half like another time.
I thought you meant like, watch it twice.
No. You watch it twice. Trust me, just watch it twice. But that morphing scene, and you know, you see the clips on the documentary. The way they did it was nuts, and it looked amazing.
Really was the bridge movie, because you had a lot of it as practical, and they made all of the individual like sections of that morph, that transformation. But then it was the in between bits were all done digitally, and that was sort of what was the proof of concept for what they could do moving forward.
My favorite thing is sort of Ron Howard's approach versus James Cameron. Ron Howard's like, I don't know, if you say you can do it, go for it. All right, whatever. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Like he didn't care. He wasn't precious about Willow. James Cameron was like,
If you can't do this, we're not doing this film.
Yeah. But he was like, he's like, I had my way. I'm going to do it in a translucent clay, and I'm going to do stop motion and do projections. And he's very, very not trusting of Dennis Muirhead's
ILM. He also had an idea of what they would do, because like he's more tactile, he's more hands-on. Whereas I feel like because of his background as an actor, Ron Howard is probably like, movie magic. Like, you guys will figure it out. Like, I can tell you what to do and you'll do it. Whereas Cameron, coming from a behind the scenes perspective, he's like, this is how we'll do it. And he comes from a special effects background as well. Like,
but he's also so precious about it.
Yeah.
And what's funny is the difference between James Cameron and Ron Howard is, let's say, their biggest movies, Avatar and Solo. And just the energy behind both of those, like Avatar, which is fine, and it took years to make, and now 15 years. It's like a 3 and a half, however many long hour, like demo thing. Just was like, it's like feels very self pleasuring.
Whereas Ron Howard came into Solo and bust out a movie in 6 months, sort of thing. Like,
let's go make motion pictures. It's fun.
Yeah,
Star Wars. Yeah. And it's you see that in this documentary between their interactions with ILM. And Ron Howard just saying, I don't know how they did it. And they did it. And I said, oh, wow.
Yeah, that's cool. Thanks, guys.
and that shot of the morphing is a static shot. Yeah. Whereas James Cameron's like, no, I'm moving the camera. Don't tell me what to do. And it's like,
dude, okay. But I said, like, John Knowles, young kid John Knowles, like, they're on set photographing every inch of it so that they can get the reflections and the refractions. And he's like, well, no, some of it's going to be handheld. The camera's always going to be moving. And they're like, you want us to do what?
And again, like, that scene doesn't need to be in that movie.
No.
It really doesn't.
No. But having it there is the thing that everyone remembers from that movie.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like, what, 2 years later with T2 coming out? And he talks about...
His lack of faith in ILM.
Yeah.
And they got his thing to work.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, they got my thing to work. I'll just do whatever I want now. And he's just like, I'll make a man made of metal. But the fact that he went to Dennis,
like, him and Dennis clearly have a good relationship. And he went to Dennis Muirhead and he said to him, like, can this be done? Can you do this? Because if not, it would have been a complete rewrite. I think we would have had a different sort of style of Terminator. We wouldn't have had the liquid metal T-1000.
9 months?
Wild.
and I, they said it was what, like 44 shots or something, or 40
yeah.
shots. I'm like,
up from like 7 in the Abyss or something, like, or like 45 total screen yeah. seconds in the Abyss.
Which I'm like, wow, that doesn't compute, only 44 shots. Yeah. Because the T-1000 is like in the movie, but I guess, yeah, they used a lot of Stan Winston, who comes back in Jurassic Park.
Yep.
To do the live action version of the dinosaurs for.
It's weird, isn't it? Stan Winston Studios aren't a part of ILM, but they are. They've worked with and have been sort of so integrated yeah. in so many of these key projects, especially around this time with the like the transition period from practical to digital. Stan yeah. Winston being like from that Harryhausen school, essentially, of stop motion, of big puppetry. Like, it's Stan Winston gets all the credit he deserves. He's a master of his craft, but yeah. it very much was the bridge into the full digital ILM takeover, essentially.
Yeah.
There's a lot of T2 in this episode, and I am here for all of it, because Terminator 2 I watched it about a month ago, maybe two. It's one of my favorite movies. I absolutely adore that movie.
Okay, I love T2. Mm-hmm. It's the first R-rated movie I saw in the theater.
I saw it unattended. Far too young. I think I saw it probably in 92 or 93, as soon as it was available at Blockbuster.
I think if it was released now, it'd be PG-13 minus the swear words. I think the swear words
probably.
Because the violence is all, there's not really anything bloody. I don't know.
It's like it seems taking so the tame. Arm off. Taking yeah. the arm, see, yeah.
Like, you look at what's on TV now. Anyway, I love T2. But I think Terminator 1's still the best one.
That's so different, though, isn't it? It's like Alien and Aliens. They're such different movies.
Yeah. But that shot that Dennis Muren talks about with the T-1000 walking through the jail bars.
Yeah. Such a good shot.
Baffling. It's still bad. And they do two angles. They do two angles on it. They do the close-up of the face, and they do the upper one. And then Cameron,
the wider shot with the gun.
And then, Cameron knowing to do the gun is like the icing on the cake. Like, it sells it. It totally sells it. It
keeps it in like the rules of everything that's been set up and talked about and established. The writing on that film is underrated, I think. Like, yeah, okay, the first Terminator probably is a tighter story and everything. But T2, it just expands the world the perfect amount. Like, there shouldn't be anything beyond T2, but
I feel like a movie now, the liquid man would run through like a whole bunch of bars.
I'm sure like that they
super
did that in,
quick, and
didn't they do that with the last one? The not the Ego Luna, the other Dark one that Fate. Came back, Dark Fate, yeah. Which of all of the bad sequels was my least, like, it was the least bad. It was the one that I preferred out of all of them, but they're all bad. But yeah, like, I'm sure that they did something like that where he was just like, you've gone with the liquid metal thing again. But it's like, but now he is guns. Now he is just everything. And it's like, whatever. Scott D mentions it here. Yeah. Sarah Connor Chronicles is the best sequel to T2. That was a great show.
I haven't seen it. I wonder if that's available somewhere. I'm sure it is.
I think I looked it up, and in the UK, at least, it's not available anywhere unless you're buying the whole thing.
Cool.
Yeah, that expanded the world quite nicely.
Speaking of the UK, there's a word in the UK apparently that's a little more sensitive than here in the United States. It was in the news recently that both Beyonce and Lizzo had to change lyrics in their song.
Oh, really?
Because the word spaz is insensitive.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I heard it in this, and it's insensitive in the same way that a lot of things are. It's context, I think. Whereas this, where the guy had sort of nicknamed himself, he was referring to himself as Spaz Williams. Like, that, fine. But, you know, it's...
I was curious about that, because it's been in the news lately, like the past couple months.
Oh, I missed it completely.
Yeah, so Lizzo has the word spaz in one of her lyrics and changed it due to sensitivity. And I was like, that's weird. I never thought of that as an insensitive word, but apparently it is more so in England over here.
No more so than things that are still said in songs quite often throughout, but I don't know. The same with anything. Like, if you're offended by it, okay, no one's ever going to take that away from you. But if you're not, then you're not, and it's not going to bother you, and you're not even going to notice it. But it's just as your shirt says, be kind to people. If someone feels hurt by it, then don't use it around them. Like, it's easy. Yeah. It's easy to not do that thing.
I just didn't know if there's something we shouldn't say here.
I think in reference to Spaz Williams, the model shop, not model shop, the guy from ILM, I've got him listed here as
CG dude.
Digital biker dude. And then Mark DePay as digital wielder dude, because they were both weird, wild characters. They were great. Spaz Williams is great.
I love that they turned the old office where they developed Edidroid into a party room.
The pit.
And Spaz saying, yeah, George was all excited because, or mentioned that, oh, this is where we created Edidroid. And then cutting to George Lucas, just
Spaz is a bit different.
Yeah. And just like shakes it. Like, I need more on that relationship. I need either like a one-on-one sit-down conversation between the both of them, or just a deep dive documentary on these two, because you could
Spaz on George and George on Spaz.
Like, because Spaz seemed like the cool guy that came out of Vietnam, and George was kind of like the sort of dorky guy.
Yeah.
And so, like, they're two different guys. But you know, George is like, this is the dude that created the spoilers. He created the T-Rex, and he created the T-Rex on his own.
Yeah,
they had essentially, because they showed this at the panel. Phil Tippett was the guy, and then they said, "Well, maybe we could do it in CG, but it won't look good." And Spaz just like took extra time out of his day to work on this T-Rex skeleton, and they were like, oh shit, this is the way to go. So George, assuming he is an incredible asset, but at the same time, probably there was friction personality wise. But again, for George, it's probably one of those things where it's like, he's getting the work done.
Yeah. And he left him to it because he's like, he's getting the work done and the work is good. It's what I want. So yeah, he might not see eye to eye with me. He might not exactly be another protege of mine, but it doesn't matter because he's cultivated this great group.
He's the one that created the how to make the guy go through the bars.
Yeah,
like the physics simulations. Man,
the relationship between Mike DePay, and Spaz, like those two together, was like it was the Dennis Mirren and Phil Tippett sort of relationship again. It was like those brothers in arms, like that's your tag team right there. And the pit, just seeing them in the pit, just felt like, and I mean, yeah, okay, you put Guns N' Roses in the background over the shots, and it's like, it just feels like the most 1991 thing ever. Right. The, like the camera footage of their just like their VHSC cameras that they were using to film stuff, and the music and the parties and everything, and like the flannel starting to come in at that point, it looked so early 90s, and it was like, oh, this is perfect for the guys who are making Terminator 2.
Right.
It's right. Absolutely ideal. It's like, it's just everyone coming together at the right place at the right time. Up here, we missed it. Mark mentioned loving seeing Robert Patrick in his tighty whities. Like, and also in some of those behind the scenes shots, like he's wearing like the classic Nine Inch Nails t-shirt as well. It's like everyone involved was like of that time. It was perfect. Yeah. It's great.
I thought Robert Patrick looked intimidating just with those lines on his body.
Yeah.
Like he looked like, just turn that into some sort of a villain. Just
Robert Patrick is such an unsung hero. Like I was watching an episode of Avatar last week, I think. And he does one of the voices in that. And it was just like, oh, yeah, that is Robert Patrick, isn't it? And it's like, he's so good. And I know that he does a lot of the trashy sort of CBS shows now, like whatever.
Well, have you seen Peacemaker?
Is he in Peacemaker as well?
Do he plays John Cena's dad?
Oh, that's great.
You gotta watch Peacemaker.
I'm 100%. I really want to.
Love it.
Yeah.
Peacemaker.
You mentioned it a couple of times.
Like, I liked the Suicide Squad. I think James Gunn did an amazing job. It's super entertaining. Mm-hmm. But dude, Peacemaker is a whole nother level. Peacemaker is phenomenal. And Robert Patrick plays.
The first season's done, right? It's all wrapped up. The first season's done.
Yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm. All right, and that makes it.
It's like eight episodes.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's not a very long season. And Robert Patrick essentially plays a white supremacist superhero. That's okay. Also Peacemaker's dad.
So similar to what's his name in The Boys? Like, I guess.
I haven't seen The Boys.
Okay, yeah.
I'll watch The Boys. You watch Peacemaker. We'll get back.
I mean, you don't have to watch The Boys. Like, people bang on about The Boys. It's one of those.
You know why I want to watch The Boys? Is so I can watch the animated.
Okay, shorts. Yeah, fair enough. I watched it because other people were watching it. I never liked the comic. It was just not for me. It was big. Garth Ennis. Yeah, it was Ennis. It was big when I was at the shop.
I never liked the comic book guys who were like edgy. Like, I'm going to do it edgy. Like, Mark Millar. Like, I liked the first run of
Kick-Ass?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't like the first run of Kick-Ass. I liked the movie. I liked the movie.
I thought the movie was fun.
The book drove me up the wall. The book was, he gets his ass handed to him in the first issue or the second issue. I'm like, that's great. And then I'm like, this is going to be all about this recovery and bouncing back. And he bounced back and gets his ass kicked again. I'm like, I'm done. I don't need to.
Mark Millar just is always rubbed me the wrong way. It just seems like a douchebag, he just tries really hard to be edgy, and he screams like he's trying too hard. And now all he does is write like comics.
That's what I like about
we Kirkman. Both used to work in comic Kirkman. Shops. It's been a
Robert
while.
Oh, yeah, Kirkman.
Kirkman, yes.
Because his books are so effortless, and then you forget. It just kind of lulls you into, like, oh, you're reading a comic book. Oh, yeah, wait. There's horrible stuff that can happen.
Jason Aaron is a similar sort of way as well. Like, you read, what's it called? Scalped. His crime book set on a Native American reservation. And it's like, it's just a good book, and then something horrific will happen. And it sort of, you know, it's a very tense and you're on edge for a lot of that book. But when something bad happens, it's like, because the tension has been there throughout, it hits. And it's sort of almost in a Sopranos type way, where it's like something bad could happen around any corner, but it doesn't. And then when it does, it really hits hard. I don't know. I think Ennis did a lot of good work. And does probably still a lot of good work, but was never someone that I was like, must read everything Ennis does. Like, a lot of people do.
I don't like when every character is edgy.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's our little comic book aside there as well. We're getting well off.
Yeah. Jeremy Kelly says they cover quite a bit about Spaz and his creation of T-Rex in the Netflix series, The Movies That Made Us, about Jurassic Park. That's where I got a lot of this information. Maybe they didn't show it at the panel, but I definitely remember seeing, I think in the Movies That Made Us, they also used that shot of him walking towards ILM with his leather jacket.
Probably. It's quite an iconic shot. There was a shot. Spaz was an interesting one. Cause like, he talks about being in the military, but he wasn't in the army. And then like seeing some stuff and them sort of saying like, is that, can you talk about your time in the army? He's like, I was never in the army. He's like, can you talk about what you were in? And he thinks about it. He's like, no. And it's like, so either he's playing that up because it's funny, or he was special forces of some sort.
I think that's the first time we've heard Lawrence Kasdan talk on screen, because it's such a weird,
it's a weird interaction, but it's pretty funny. And they obviously play it for comedy. And he's got quite a buzz cut throughout most of it, but there's a shot of him like with sort of almost like a longer curly mullet, and he looked so much like Psycho Sid that I had to just make sure that at some point Spaz Williams hadn't gone off into the world of professional wrestling. because he looked like the sort who, like, in the
early 90s. He seems like the kind of guy that would be part of his story.
Yeah, like at one point, Spaz Williams was like I don't know, a background player on WCW or something. Like, but yeah.
Is the Dinobot Slag? Is that
Slag? Is like a slut. Basically, it's slut shaming sort of word that people use. But yeah,
I think Slug is a good name for a
Slug is Dinobot. A good name. Yeah, it makes more sense. Slag though, if it's a robot and it's slag metal and things like that, you know, it works. Yeah. They change names all the time. Sometimes I'm like, yep, no, probably for the best. And other times I'm whatever, don't worry. But hey, if it offends someone, it offends someone. You can't take that away from them.
Talking about Doug Chang.
Doug Chang, yeah, coming in. Again, similar story to John Knoll, I found, where he's like, these things changed my life. And also Alan Poon, when she came in. Mm-hmm. Like, again, similar story. Like, we're of that generation now where these kids saw Star Wars and it made them go, I want to do this. And then, 10 years later, they are doing that. They're there making it. And in her story, like, you know, giving up her life and moving away from, moving from Hong Kong to London to study, meeting her husband, like, seemed very devoted and seemed like she was like, I've got to go do my thing. He wanted to do his thing. Yeah. Amicably split, but also it was quite heartbreaking because, like, it seemed like there was no love loss there, sort of thing. Like, it was, they were still very much
in love. She still seemed very much bummed about it.
Yeah, like, it's a shame that it had to go that way, but also it had to go that way because she needed to do that. And I got a lot of respect for it because that's a hard decision, but also, you know, not giving up on your dreams for someone else it takes a lot. So fair play to her for doing it. She seemed like she found her family. Cool. Again, she found the people.
That's the best part. So. Yeah. I love that Doug Chang, when he first goes to ILM, was excited to see Steve Gawley. And I was yay, yeah. Steve Gawley fans.
Steve Gawley and Dennis Mirren as well. He's like, wow, you really do live up to your stature. And I think I mentioned it in the first episode. Like, when I got to meet Dennis Mirren very, very briefly at Celebration in 2005, I was the same way. I was like, wow, you really are a big dude. Like, he's just very, very tall. He's a very long man.
I saw him on the stage at Celebration, but it's from that distance, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
But I've never really met any of these guys.
I've
only been to one Celebration, and
I've walked past John Knoll in a hallway, and I got to shake Dennis Mirren's hand. That was it. Out of these guys,
was it a hallway at a convention?
Yeah. It was either that. I think it might have been the following Celebration.
It's not like it wasn't like a random encounter where you.
No. Unfortunately,
it's,
not.
That was
my Kenny Baker. That was my Kenny Baker story. Was meeting and Sam Jackson meeting them both on planes. But yeah.
I saw Kenny Baker at Comic-Con once, and of course he's behind the thing selling autographs and stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to buy autographs. Yeah. But I saw him outside of his booth, and I shook his hand because
that's cool.
It was my shot to do it without
spending money,
in his hand.
But it's also nicer. I feel like it's nicer because it's like, hey, I recognize you, not because you've got a name plaque there. It's like because I know who you are.
The convention time's tough because, like, if I were to see John Knoll in any hallway, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I'd say hi, have a bit of a conversation. But at a convention setting, you're like, this guy's been fucking bothered all weekend long.
And the reason I didn't sort of try and stop him then is was like, he's probably on his way to or from somewhere. Like, he doesn't want to be like doing this. He doesn't want this constant interaction. It's nice for them. We've said it, like, they can have at least a level of anonymity as opposed to like the front of camera people.
Yeah, there was a Comic-Con where me and my friend were in an elevator with John Knoll. And the most I could muster up was a nod and a smile, it's an elevator, like, he's not going anywhere, is he? But I was just like,
but that's what makes it worse, doesn't it? Because it's like they're trapped. Doug Chang's great. I could listen to Doug Chang talk about things, just anything, because he's just so soothing. Like, he is an ASMR human.
Yeah, we went in, we got into the Doug Chang panel like Celebration, and it's just hearing that same voice I've heard on countless DVD documentaries, and hearing him talk about like new things, like him designing the Razor Crest and the Naboo fighter for Book of Boba Fett and stuff, and I'm like, oh, this is great. He needs to just put out like a series of podcasts of him just explaining one thing.
Oh yeah, Doug Chang podcast. He was on the
stage.
Great.
He was on the stage by himself.
Oh wow.
No moderator, no nothing else. Had the headpiece in and did it like a TED talk, and I just for the full hour nonstop.
That's when I last saw him. Was it Celebration in London? The last time they did it was 2016. I was only there for the day, and one of the sort of the panel rooms was essentially on the floor, but like curtained off. And I was like, I know that voice. I was walking past, and I sort of just basically ducked into the back, and it was Doug Chang doing his talk. And I just sat down for, I think I only caught the last like half an hour of it or anything. But yeah, it's just him on stage. He had some slides, and he was just going over it like a TED Talk presentation. And it was like, this is great. This is just so soothing and nice hearing him talking about the art and the process of it.
There were people sleeping in our row.
Yeah. It's weirdly one of those panels that it's almost like a time fill panel because it's so relaxing.
But lets you decompress.
Yeah. But if you're into it and if you're interested in it, and even if you just like hearing that guy talk about some of the stuff that he's designed, it's always worth it. And I will always, if I've got the time and I'm not urgently going somewhere else, I'll try and get into a Doug Chang panel because he's great. And I'm glad that, because he's someone who stepped away from ILM and from Lucas for a while, or at least sort of stepped back, like post prequels, post episode two, I think. So him coming back with the Disney buyout and everything like that around that time anyway, it's great. It's nice having him sort of essentially heading up that department now.
Yeah, I feel like anybody in ILM has to take a break. It sounded like Dennis Muren took a break in this one just to read about.
Yeah, he took a year off.
Computer graphics.
Yeah, he took a study
year. Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson didn't come back, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like.
And what an amazing place that sort of like encourages that almost. It's just like they all get to go and do their own thing, like find their own path. If you're Joe Johnson, you're going to go become a director and make your own movies and things like that. If you're Doug Chan, you go off, you, I don't know, maybe do what, I don't know what he did in the interstitial time, but like, that's great that he got the opportunity to go and sort of explore a little bit away from it. And then, because then they can come back and they're more refreshed and they put out some of their best work.
Yeah.
It's great. It's really good. I've got nothing else on this episode. I think we've covered everything else. My only other note here was Terminator 2 is such an amazing movie because they talked about it a lot, and that then led from Terminator 2 to Jurassic Park, as we said, and that teases into next week's episode.
Yeah, and the next thing after Jurassic Park, the next big breakthrough in visual effects would be Episode 1, and then we all know what happened after that. We all know where it went after that.
Yeah, there was no more Star Wars movies. That was it. Like, that was just just did one more, and that was it. Sad times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it is fun to revisit the dark times.
It is. Because that's the thing. Like, we talk about the dark times, but there was so much good stuff. It wasn't Star Wars, but it was tangentially related to. Like,
I think that's why I know all these guys.
Yeah.
It's because they were my only link to Star Wars, and I knew that.
And we knew that the people behind the scenes of... That's why, like, for a long time, when I was at that age, so, like, 91, that I would have been, 4 or 5 years old? And so, around that time, I'm seeing these behind-the-scenes, like, videos or specials on TV or something. And it's like, okay, cool. So, these are the only people that make movies. Because the movies that I'm watching have the same people behind the scenes as the movies that I adore and have grown up watching. So... That is what Hollywood is. That is what movies are. Is these like handful of people. And it's awesome. And they are still doing it today, which is great. Or overseeing the next generation or the generation after that even today.
Yeah. All righty.
It's great.
I'm excited. Next week's the last one, right?
Yeah. I'm sad to see it go.
A little bit of the vacation is over.
Yeah. But then we've got a couple of weeks off in between. We've got some stuff lined up. We've got an Obi-Wan documentary to talk about. And then, yeah, maybe a couple of other picks, or one other pick, I think, possibly, before Andor starts, which is very exciting.
I think it's 2 weeks. We only have two picks. There's 2 weeks. So once this is done, our next episode will be on the 31st, and then we have, like,
two. You've already got your pick locked in. You haven't said it yet, but you've... Oh.
It may or may not be locked in.
Okay.
There's some irons in the fire. So the week of my pick is a little bit up in the air. So we'll see.
Interesting. We'll see. Okay. We'll see. But Rav's got a pick, and yeah, I think I know what I'm probably going to choose. But we'll get there. We've still got another one of these left. So... yeah. Where's the banner? Let's get the banner going.
You want to do that?
Yeah, why not?
I already have opened the video clip section.
Okay. I got it. This one. So yeah. Perfect. Head over to youtube.com/liveactionstarwars, liveactionstarwars.com. There's links there to the merch. Twitter, the merch. Instagram. Everything there is Live Action SW. So just go follow, share, tell your friends, tell your mum. And yeah, we will be back next week talking about Live Action. No, yeah, Light and Magic, Part 6. I don't know what it's called yet. I'm tired.
Live and Action.
Live and Action. And that's Magic.
Pretty good. I'm doing good this morning.
Good.
The sun has completely enveloped my whole.
I thought it was just your natural glow.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, man, it was good talking. I'm excited for next week, and I really don't want it to end.
No,
but then great. Also I don't want to see a whole thing on just like Marvel movies. I watched Godzilla versus Kong yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, they can just do anything now.
Mm-hmm.
This is anything. So I can't wait to see what the next big leap in
a breakthrough
effects
yeah.
are. Where it's like going to like surprise me.
I think it, we talked about it before. It's going to have to be like photorealistic humans that we don't even know. Like they're just going to have a human in there. And then they'll be like, oh yeah, no, that person was fake.
Yeah.
That's the way that they need to reveal it though. Otherwise people will nitpick. Yeah.
I think it'll end with Luke.
Mm, yeah, possibly. Cool. All right. Well, until next week, until we talk about Light and Magic Part 6, don't give it to hate.
Celebrate the love.
Punch it.